Like, I've got young kids, and so when we play a game or a sport, like, we are absolutely keeping score.
Yeah.
Right? And because they have to learn to lose, and, like, they don't like it. We play Guess Who, and I dominate them, you know? And it's like, I just keep getting
I lost a game of Trouble to my two-year-old, and it really upset me. But I was helping her a little bit. You know?
Yeah, and two, that's probably okay, but, like, my son's six, my daughter's nine. It's like, I'm not going to – if you beat me, then that's awesome.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to let you because you're going to lose so much in life. I don't want you to have your first loss at 18.
Real business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Real Business Owners Podcast. It's, of course, it's Trev and I, as always. And we got a guest today. This is a local friend that has just become a published author. How long ago?
January 3rd is when it came out.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And I just started flipping through some of the pages. But yeah, he's an entrepreneur. He's, you know, a business owner, a husband, a father, and now a published author. And he's got an awesome story to share with us today. And as I started going through your book today, I saw that one of your first endeavors was flipping Lamborghinis, right? And had a lesson in that. Or investing into a guy flipping Lamborghinis, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, I've had some of those hard lessons myself of when you're just like, not trusting your gut, shelling out that money. But I don't know where you want to start, man. I know you got a hospitality business, and things are going well for you. And tell us a little bit about how you got into entrepreneurship and what you're doing.
That's a great place to start. So I have just always been into it as a kid. Like, I remember in second grade, I created a restaurant in my basement. We had like an unfinished basement. And for whatever reason, I called it the All Night Midnight Bar. I don't know why that was the name, but it was. And it's like, I like took all my old, like the toys I didn't want. I put them on the shelves. I sold those. I made my friends sandwiches and sold them sodas. And I remember the first day I made like $20 and some change. And that's like in second grade. I remember thinking my dad's friend owned a bar, and I was like, I bet I made more money than he did on his first day.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way he made $20, you know? Yeah. That's like how confident I was as a little second year old. And then I built a movie theater, because that was back in when you had VHS tapes, and like I just had just dozens and dozens like recorded from HBO, you know, all these movies. So I'd ride my bike around the neighborhood and tell my friends like, come see Ace Ventura this afternoon at 3, you know. Ultimately, I was just charging my friends to hang out with me, but I just was always doing it, you know. And then in high school, I would buy Jordans on eBay and resell them to kids in my school. And so it's just like, and I just had a hard time learning too. So I knew growing up, like, this traditional form of education, it just doesn't work for me. Like, I can't see that path. And so, and my parents they weren't able to create a platform for me to go to school or like have this like safety net.
Yeah.
So I was like, I can get a loan for school or I can get a loan for a business. And I'm going to go for the business, 'cause I know I can make money back that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and so that's that business that I sold you that cell phone at. I started that when I was 19, you know, and that was really my form of education.
Yeah. We were both real young guys. He still looks super young, you know? So when he messaged me, he was like, hey man, you know, it's got my book. Want to come and chat with you guys. I was like, he told me the story. He's like, you know, and I'm looking at his face and I'm like, oh, he does look familiar, but you know, like I was 24 back then. Like, this kid would have been like 12, you know, like, there's no way he sold me a cell phone
maybe,
at that event.
Maybe,
you know?
He was 12 and he, based upon, you know, what he just said,
he was hustling at 12.
You know, he opened his own cell phone.
How old are you?
12.
Now I'm 34.
He's 34.
Yeah.
So we are 6 years apart, but yeah, so you were still just
probably
a young,
18,
young guy
19
then,
or whatever.
Yeah, that time. Yeah, I think of 19. I think when I was doing that.
Yeah. Well, dude, maybe you should have stuck with flipping Jordans on eBay, bro. Like,
I know
that shoe game is
real now.
I know.
Like, it's way better now than I was doing it.
You know, I don't know what you were selling them for back then, but it's like, man, my kids bring me these, you know, Jordans, and they're like $800, $600. My one son saved up a bunch of money and I gave him his school clothes allowance, and he spent them all on one pair of Jordans for $650.
My God.
That's what I would do too. I'd get my allowance for lunch and I could get a bagel and cream cheese for $1, and I had $5 a day. So then that gave me four extra dollars. Yeah. And I would buy used Jordans that didn't look good. And then I would just clean
Polish them up.
Yeah.
Make them look good again. And then that's how I was able to like get the profit.
Yeah. Dude. Shoe game.
So tell us a little bit about, like, so you've always been in entrepreneurship, it sounds like, or had the bug, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So you started doing cell phones at, you know, 19 or whatever.
Yeah.
When did the transition happen? In entrepreneurship, I think it's important to you know, highlight here. Sometimes we start doing one thing and it just leads to another, then sure. another, and then another, yeah. right? Like there's a business that somebody's listening right now that they have. All that business is just a vehicle to something else, sure, right?
Absolutely.
And so tell us a little bit about kind of some of the transitions that you've made to the point where you're at today.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
and how long you've kind of been in the management side of things with properties.
So what's cool about that is I started, so my business partner now, Breck, we both worked at Best Buy here in St. George. We built it. And I think we did our training in this building actually at the time. And we built that together. And then he went to sell one and he was like, dude, you got to come sell phones. Like, this is crazy. And it was crazy. It was like the Wild West. Like they're yeah. so good back then. And Alltel bought cellular ones. That's how I got in with Alltel. And because it was like a new market, the VP was out here. And so they were like, you guys should really just do your own store. Like we need retailers. And so that's how that started. And I was thinking as like a young person, like, this is great because this owning a business gives me this like credibility, if you will,
yeah.
that like now I've done something, you know, whether I'm successful or not, I get to say I own this business. And so, and at that time I didn't make any money because everything I made went back into the business. And it was really hard because when I would buy a phone, I wouldn't get paid for 60 days. I was going to be out for all that window. And so I'd open the store every single day and I didn't have any employees, so I couldn't afford them. So I'd work open to close at my store. And then I would go to Tuacon after, and I had this big wheel and I would spin it and I had free on it and I had boxes of candy. So every kid walking up was like, mom, yeah, let me spin this wheel. And I'd tell them to spin it as hard as they could. And while they did that, I'd pitch their parents on going to a timeshare with Wyndham. And so if they said yes and agreed, I made $70. I could get about three of those a night.
Yeah.
And that's the money that I lived off of. And then in 2008, Goldman Sachs bought Alltel. And so I knew, okay, there's no way they want to run a cell phone business. Like that's not going to happen. So I put it up for sale and I was really lucky because that was April.
Yeah.
And we know the economy crashed in about October.
Yeah.
So I was able to exit that. And then I got a management job with Wireless Advocates, who used to be in all the Costcos. And I would have never got that management position had I not owned the store, right? Even though I didn't manage anyone. Yeah, yeah. So it's not like I was qualified in the sense of the term. And I only had four guys that I managed. And it was, at the time, there was like 400 Costcos and it ranked 387th when I started. And in the 10 months I was in that role, it was the number one performing location in the United States. So then I got promoted to district manager. And so now I'm really like
balling out
or what? Blowing waters I don't belong in. You know, like all my peers are 15, 20 years older than me with MBAs and like high business IQ. And I don't really know much of anything. And I've only managed four people. Now I've got all these people across the entire state of Arizona. And so it took me a while to like figure out like, how can I do this? And then I ended up setting a goal, like I'm going to be the best district manager in the company. And I did that the following 2 years. And then I got recruited to come to St. George. That's what brought me back to fix a wireless company here. But then my wife got pregnant with our daughter. I was like, okay, I can't work for someone else anymore. Like I just don't have enough control over my income to provide the life that I want. So when my daughter was 6 months old, we moved to Houston, Texas and started a marketing company. We had gotten a contract with the Houston Astros with the Wall Street Journal and Houston Chronicle to do marketing for them. And so I knew I had a job for 6 months, but it's all commission based because it's all based on sales.
Yeah.
And then my business partner and I, we grew that to be really successful over the course of the next 3 years. I think our last year we paid out over $1 million in commissions to our reps. And then when my son was born, it was like, all right, let's go back home. So I came back and I didn't know what I was going to do. I knew I loved helping people and I knew I loved finance. So I got licensed as a financial advisor and started that practice, rented an office from Breck, my business partner now. And we and our family had a family budget, right? Like I ran it like a business. And at the time, because we're in this transition, like it was really tight for us. And he heard me over the phone with my wife saying, you went over your budget by $5. You know, like, what are you doing? She's like, well, it's $5. I was like, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's $5. Like we can't spend more. We can only spend what we have. And he overheard this conversation. So he asked me to coffee the next morning and said, hey, do you want to be the CFO for the Cliff Rose? Cause I don't treat my business that way. Like I heard you talking to your wife about $5. Like we need someone who's worried about $5 at our business, you know? And that's what got me into tourism and hospitality. And then taking that property and joining the Hilton family, we had to start a management company. And that's how Vibrant was born. And it was really originally just to manage the Cliff Rose. But now 5 years later, we've got 20 clients all over the place. And it really all started like through that journey of like going out and forging my own path.
No, that's cool.
Yeah.
What in the industry that you're in hospitality, what inspired you to write a book? You know, because like for us, it makes sense, right? Like because we have a podcast and this, and are you trying to get on stages and motivate people and just kind of add to your resume, or is that supposed to serve the current business that you're in?
Sure.
Right. Usually there's some motivation. Some people just say, hey, I've got a cool story and I want to share it.
Yeah.
That's their motivation.
Right.
Was there, and then some people say, I want to be a published author because it gives me credibility. Like, absolutely. What was your mindset going into saying, I want to write a book?
And so it always been something because I had a hard time learning, I really self-educated myself in like my young adulthood, yeah. And just got a passion for reading and like learning. And so then I was like, man, I love this. Like, I want to be able to help someone like they've helped me.
Yeah.
So I always knew I wanted to write a book. And then in 2019, I was like, I wasn't taking care of myself. And I realized like the shift where I always showed up professionally. Like I said, I was very successful professionally and I never like fell short of anything that I was supposed to do. If you said be at the office at 6, I'd be there at 5:50. Like I wasn't going to be outworked professionally, but personally, that was not the case.
Right.
Like if I was like, you know what, I'm gonna start going to the gym. Next morning, alarm goes off and I'm like, nah, I'll go to the gym tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow I'm going to go to the gym, you know? And so I just never, ever showed up for myself in the same way I showed up for other people. So I was like, how can I switch this dynamic? Like, how can I fix this for myself? And I know that humans love rewards and I love accountability. So I just built a basic spreadsheet that had all the things that mattered to me, how much I was drinking, how much I was eating, what I weighed, if I exercised, and if I read. Okay. And it was just a simple why it went green, no, it went red. And I said, I want to do it this many times per week in each category. And that sense of accountability allowed me to finally show up for myself. And so I lost 40 pounds and I had this amazing year and I felt so good. And then in 2020, in January, I wrote a thing on LinkedIn, and I'm not like a social media expert by any means. I'd get like 5 likes and 20 views, you know? But I was like, you know what? Maybe there's people on this platform who also show up professionally, but not for themselves. And it just blew up all over the world.
Wow.
And all these people are like, oh my God, this is great to hear. Like, that's so helpful. And I told them all, I'll send you the spreadsheet for free. Like, this isn't a business. It's just, I'm just sharing something that worked. And if you want it, let me give it to you. And so, and then obviously COVID happened a few months later and that really crippled tourism. Like Vibrant almost went out of business because all of our clients had to let us go. We got down to $11.37 on our checking account. And luckily we secured a contract to do a branding project for a Hawaiian skincare line, which is nothing like completely out of left field, but we had to find some industry that wasn't, and we could use our same, like the principles of what we do works no matter what industry it is. So it was like, okay, so that saved us. And then I took a role with the Utah Tourism Industry Association as their executive director. Cause it was like, man, I don't know if Vibrant's ever coming back, but I'll run Vibrant on the side while I do this. But so my habits got bad because of COVID. So I had that window of time where I let excuses build and I thought like, whatever, you know, my gym closed, so I'm not going to work out, which is obviously an excuse, right?
Yeah,
and excuses are just lies we tell ourselves, but it felt good to lie to myself so I could feel good about my bad decisions. And then, so I was like, man, so I, really all that gain I got in 2019, I kind of lost. So I was like, how can I bring this more to life? And I got a speaker at the Utah Tourism Industry Association called Will Bowen. He wrote The Complaint-Free World. And his whole thing was like, if people complain less, the world would be better. Mm. So he had a bracelet on his wrist. And the idea was every time you complain, you'd move it from one wrist to the other. Just to like check in with your mind that like, hey, you did this thing. Yeah, exactly. Quit bitching. And so I was like, ooh, I like that. Like, I love that visual essence. And I was like, maybe I could take my spreadsheet and incorporate that. And so that's what these bands are on my wrist. As I was doing all this research on psychology and realized like we can only make so many good decisions in a day. Right? Like that's why Mark Zuckerberg wears the same thing every day because it's one less decision.
It's decision fatigue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how can I incorporate that? And also I usually make good decisions throughout the day. About 9 o'clock, all hell breaks loose. You know, like
in
that's
the evening
for me. Yeah. Like then I'm having a whiskey. Yeah. One whiskey's two whiskey. Two whiskeys equals a sandwich. A sandwich equals chips.
Yeah.
Chips equals Netflix. And then my night's ruined, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'm certainly not having a good morning because I had too much fun last night, you know?
Yeah.
And so I needed to find a way. Cause the problem is like, there's one whiskey. If I have one whiskey today, is it going to ruin my life? Of course not. But if I perpetually do that forever, at some point it shifts and it becomes detrimental. Mm. So I had a hard time placing value on these small decisions that in the big scheme of things didn't matter, but I kept making repeatedly. So they were mattering.
Well, you got to be a student of inevitability.
Yeah.
Right. To a certain extent. Like if I keep making these decisions, what will happen, right?
Absolutely.
It's inevitable that this X will happen if I keep making these bad decisions. There's a compound effect, right?
And so that's what these bracelets represent. So now, like, I'm a perpetual snoozer, and so I know that's not good for me. So now alarm goes off, boom, I wake up, I move one bracelet from one wrist to the other. And I figure there's about 10 times a day we can make a pivot and make a better decision than we would have other ways. Because a lot of times we're just looking for dopamine, right?
Yeah.
You go in the break room, you grab a Snickers, you don't even really want the Snickers, you eat it and you feel good, and then 20 seconds later you're like, damn it, why did I eat that Snickers?
Yeah.
Really, you just wanted that dopamine and that release from, like, what you were doing.
Yep.
So now I go in the break room, I just move a bracelet from one wrist to the other, and now I got that dopamine I wanted anyways without the bad habit. Mm. And so that's really the premise of the book of Winning the Moment, is essentially built around how you can make good decisions in the moment that make a difference for you. And I don't tell people what the decision should be, because I want people to define it for themselves. Like, if you're in a bout of depression and you can't get out of bed until 11 every day, but today you wake up at 10, hell yeah, good work.
Yeah.
You just won that moment, right?
Yeah.
So that's, and so really ultimately, to answer your question in the longest way that I can, it was,
I liked it.
That's good, it was really about making
it elongated even more. Yeah,
making a difference for people and show. I think that too often people think that, like, life sucks or it's difficult. And if they say that, then of course it's going to be true, because we want to be right instinctually. So if we say something, then we'll make sure to find all the reasons why what we just said is true. And I just want to shift that momentum and let people know, like, your life is what you make it, and make a big difference. And I want to get on stages and I want to talk to people. And I believe that through doing that, it's obviously going to benefit Vibrant as well. Right. Yeah. So there's just so many, it benefits in so many different ways, but really now I get to be in that second part of my career where now I can really help a large audience. And that's why I love doing sales management, because I was really just helping. I never did anything when I was a district manager. I didn't sell, but I helped my people succeed, and their success became my success.
Yeah. Mm. You know, like, what I'm thinking about is, as you've been going through your stories, you know, I hired this guy to help me with my speaking, right? And I'm like, oh, there's just gotta be a better way, right? To where it's like, you know, I get prepared better, and there's like an art in how you write things and you present them and keep attention and all these things, right? So I hired this guy, but then he pulls me in to his trainings, and it's all around, like, NLP, right? The neuro-linguistic programming.
Oh, sure.
Uh-huh. Right. And so what's cool about your story is, like, really what he's teaching people to do is, like, get out of all, like, the presuppositions or the suppositions that we all live by, right? Because it's all just conformed by our childhood, our programming, everything. And he's like, just start becoming, like, a wizard of your own life, right? And so what he's saying is, like, you guys don't have to live by this, like, blueprint over here.
Absolutely.
You get to live however you want to live. And so a lot of people, like, you know, take, for example, your heart starts racing, right? A lot of people are like, oh, I'm nervous, right? He's like, but you don't have to believe you're nervous just because your heart's racing. Like, you could tie that to something else. You could create your own presuppositions, which is like, oh, when my heart starts racing, that's when I know I'm getting more confident, right?
Yeah, I'm excited.
So, like, you get to create all these suppositions, right? And so, like, it's cool with, like, your wristbands and moving them over. It's like, you are your own wizard. Like, you came up with your own idea of, like, you know what? Every time I make a decision I'm proud of, I'm moving from this wrist to this wrist throughout the day, right? I'm winning these pivots all throughout the day.
Yeah.
And so you came up with that on your own, right?
Yeah. Yes,
yeah. And so that's a cool thing about your story that I'm thinking about, is like, you're doing it right. A lot of people are just living how they think they're supposed to live, which is a supposition.
Absolutely.
Instead of just creating their suppositions on how they can live. Right. And so I think that was just a cool example of that.
Well, I love games. I love sports. Right. So also, like, so much of winning and losing for me was through my childhood in sports. And so I think, like, you can gamify so many things. So I'm just gamifying my day. Like, I'm just creating opportunities to win. And the thing is that, so there's a thing that happens in your brain called the winner effect. And your brain, the biology in your brain actually changes when you win, and you become more confident and you believe you have an elevated sense of ability. And so that's why when people, like, go on winning streaks, or you see momentum in sports, or they did the study with mice, and whenever mice fought, whatever mouse won, always won every fight from that point on, because it was like, it only knows that mouse ain't coming over here.
Yeah.
Like, this is my spot, you know? And the other mouse actually would stop going there, because the other mouse was like, well, every time I go there, it's bad for me, you know? So if we can create momentum for people, even, and again, I don't care what it is. Like, if you're drinking a 64 ounce soda every day and now you're drinking a 20 ounce, that's great.
Yeah.
You made progress. Yeah, you know, I wouldn't drink the soda at all, but that's okay, because you're drinking less than you were. And so, and then once you get that momentum going, just like Jim Collins says in Good to Great, like, the momentum wheel spins whichever way you're going. So if it's going positively for you, things are going to keep going that direction, but the negative wheel also works. And so you've got to find a way to stop that negative momentum. And it may be as easy as just a decision in the moment.
Yeah. Well, what's coming top of mind for me is just the neural associations, right? Like we talked about this just the other day. You know, Kel, when he goes to Mexico and hears the music or whatever,
you know, or whatever. I love Mexico music.
Yeah. Like he loves that Latino music, that vibe, because it literally, his brain associates that to Mexico.
Right.
You know, and we have a buddy that absolutely hates it. Right. But he's also worked in construction for a long period of time.
Sure.
So what's his neural association with that music?
Work.
Work.
Kale's his vacation.
Right? Kale's his vacation, right? Yeah. So how we associate something to something else does matter,
absolutely,
right? Like, and so the reason why you're staying in this blueprint is because when you go home, you normally there have a whiskey and then another whiskey and then a sandwich. And so the neural association is when I go here, this is what I do.
Absolutely.
Right. Rather than reprogramming that whole situation and creating a new association with that environment, whatever the environment is, you're just changing the neural association by just doing this, moving it from one wrist to the other. And it's an action that you're taking and your brain associates it with something. And then you get that little dopamine hit that you were looking for. Right.
Yeah. And so often we're on autopilot too. And so we're like not even really consciously aware of our decisions because we're just doing them, you know?
Yeah.
So it's making you be conscious of like, oh wait, no, I don't want to do that thing, or I do want to do that thing. And you're bringing your conscious mind forward. Yep. And anytime you can do that, I think that's really positive.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I've heard before, like anytime that you make a change in life, that's also a good time to make additional changes. Like, so for instance, when I moved to Virgin, I changed some of the things that I did. I started running more because I wanted my brain to associate living there. This is how I live. So I changed something big. In other words, the house, the environment was different. And so since that was already new and different, I could create a new association with that environment with my brain that this is how I respond or act in this type of an environment, right?
Absolutely.
And so it's if somebody's out there about to make a big change or a big move, whether you're moving your business into a new location or whether you're moving your home into, or you're moving yourself from one home to another, that's a perfect time to recreate your life pretty much, right? So it's a lot easier to honor the changes when everything else visually has also changed, because your brain will associate, well, this area and this environment, this is how I respond and this is how I react.
Absolutely.
Right. And so I think it's really cool how you're basically just doing that with something as small as just moving, you know, this wristband, you know, over to the other side. So
I think the other thing that's important too is that the book is called Winning the Moment, but I want to make sure that people understand it's okay to lose. Because like as business owners, we know like you lose all the time, you know, like Vibrant almost had to be closed on multiple occasions because we're brand new. And so we're growing. And when you grow, then you have pitfalls and you learn things. And so it's like we learn so much more in a loss than we do in a win.
Yeah.
Right. Like when the Chiefs just won the Super Bowl, they're not back like grinding on film. Like, what could we do better?
Yeah.
You know, Jalen Hurts is in that film room. Like,
just
like, oh man, I'm never gonna let that happen again. You know, so you need the losses because that creates opportunity for growth. And you need the wins because that creates opportunity for momentum. They each have a valuable piece in our lives. And so I think that like we need to, like I've got young kids. And so when we play a game or a sport, like we are absolutely keeping score.
Yeah.
Right. And because they have to learn to lose and like they don't like it. We play guess who and I dominate them, you know? And it's like, I just keep getting
I lost trouble, a game of trouble to my 2-year-old and it really upset me. But I was helping her a little bit. You know?
Yeah, and two, that's probably okay. But like my son's 6, my daughter's 9. And it's like, I'm not gonna, if you beat me, then that's awesome.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna let you because you're gonna lose so much in life. I don't want you to have your first loss at 18.
Yeah.
Like, I don't wanna put you in this bubble where you never understand, you never experience a loss. And then you do and you're devastated
because
you don't know how to handle it, you know? And then when they do beat me, then it's like euphoric because it's like, I did this thing I never thought I could do,
took
you know?
15 L's in a row, and that W means a lot more just, after a bunch,
absolutely.
Of, bunch of losses.
So I want them to exercise those muscles of losing, you know?
Yeah. Well, in your book, you know, you alluded to, I haven't gotten to that part yet in your book where you talk about your principles and how they can work for like really any industry. I mean, is that something that, what are some of your principles that you talk about in your book that that can apply to everybody?
I think the most important thing, honestly, is just being present. Because I think too often people are just fretting so much about their past failures or their past anything, or they're looking so forward to their future. So I call it I'll be happy when moments. Like, I'll be happy when I get that new house. Yeah. I'll be happy when I get that promotion. I'll be happy when I get that new car. And what your mind is telling yourself is that you can't be happy now.
Right.
Right. Because you've already said, like, this, you're putting happiness on something outside of yourself. And so I think that if you can be present, it allows you to get so much more out of life, because that's the only place that we can be. And too often, I think that doesn't happen. And even like the words that we use, I think, are so important. So yesterday at SU, I did this exercise, and back to like our blueprint, I wanted to ask all the students at the beginning how they define success, because really our definition of success so many times is based on just our, wherever we are, right? Yeah. Whoever our parents were, whatever the culture was we grew up in, like that's how we're going to see what success is. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it's not your own definition. It's whatever people told you. And so, and then I had the ones who were brave enough. I said, well, you share, you know? And one girl, part of her definition of success was content. And I was like, content? I was like, I don't know the definition of content, but I feel like that's being average.
Yeah.
And I was like, and that's how you define success. And I was like, that's, you got to be careful with the words you choose.
Right.
Because now you've already said to yourself, like, oh, if I'm average, I'm good. And I don't believe you mean that, but you probably were too afraid to say you wanted more because you didn't want to fail. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so then I go through my speech, and then at the end I have them write down the definition again. And it was awesome to see how it much changes. They changed their definition of success over the course of like a 30-minute conversation.
Wow, that's cool.
That is cool. So do you still use your spreadsheet?
Nope, I don't. I take that back. I do. I just don't use it as often. I'll like do it once a week. I'll go back and update it, you know?
Yeah.
But I still have it because it, like, I can't remember my bracelets every day.
Yeah.
You know, so I still have the spreadsheet so I can look back and like have the analytical data on the year to see how I did.
Very analytical then.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
That's cool. So tell me what your day looks like now. Like, what's a normal day for you? Cause obviously you called yourself out at one point and said, I need to make some changes.
Yeah.
I need to win more moments.
Absolutely. Right.
Hence the title of the book. So what does your day look like now? Do you have a set of non-negotiables or predetermined decisions that you've already made?
Yeah.
So you just walk into your day, you already know you're going to do them, or?
Yeah, pretty much. I think that at the beginning of the year, I set out and said, like, I got to have somewhere I'm going. Okay. So I got something I'm working towards. And so much of that was like getting back to a healthy level of fitness and just like intake. Right. And so my alarm goes off at 5:40. I allow myself one snooze, because I like it.
Yeah.
So then that's done at 5:50.
But it's already predetermined.
Yes, uh-huh, so it's okay. It's still a win. It's still a win.
Yeah.
And then I check my calendar first, because in my meditation, I do this thing called the 6-phase meditation by Vishen Lakhani. It's awesome. It's a guided meditation.
Yeah.
Really love it. And part of it is visualizing your day. So I check my calendar first, so that way when I'm visualizing like the actual day that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Do my meditation. Then I go do my workout. Then I get like my athletic greens and like all that stuff you got to get after. Then I'll read while I'm drinking those. I'll read my 10 pages or more if I can, but the minimum is at least 10. And then I get to work, go to work. And in work, I'm pretty good at winning the moment. So it's like the other day we've got these really good like chocolate bars with caramel in them from like a school fundraiser.
From the world's best chocolate. Yes. Uh-huh. Or yeah. Like that. Right. Yep. Best.
And I wanted,
they are pretty good.
Yeah. They're very
good. They might have titled them accurately.
And so I really wanted one the other day, but then I was like, oh shoot, no, I'm going to win the moment. I had some water, but sometimes I'll lose. Like I might still have a candy bar. Yeah. Right. But my day is pretty good. Then I get home and it's really about like my wife and my kids for like when I get home until they go to bed. And then after they go to bed, then that's when I'll either read again or like I've never been on social media before, but now I have to be because it's just this platform of an audience of people to reach for the book. And so that takes a lot of work to make that work for you. Yeah. And so I like to do that like when my wife's putting the kids to bed and my kids are asleep, so I'm not on my phone during their time. And then after that, if she's not too tired, we'll maybe watch a show together. Then I get in bed, read, try and be asleep by 10, or at least in bed by 10.
So you read to start your day and to end the day?
Yep.
Or if you just didn't get your pages in the morning, you do it at night? Or
I like to always do it in the morning just to make sure no matter what it gets done.
Okay.
But then I'm trying to really immerse myself in that audience because like to succeed in the audience, I got to be a part of the audience. Mm. And so I want to really get through a lot of books this year and support other authors because I can't expect them to support me if I'm not going to support them. So through being on Instagram, I found all these other amazing authors and all these amazing books that are out there I didn't know about.
Yeah.
And so now I'm like, I really want to get through those, you know?
So you've already been here, done that in terms of the podcast because you visualized it this morning?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Okay. And it went great.
Yeah. There you go. Winning the day or winning that moment.
Yep, man. Exactly.
So is that like a networking technique for you as well? Like reading all these other authors' books and I think reaching out?
Yeah. And then like, and then I'll post about like what I read. And then, so there's all like, I didn't even know this existed, but there's like a Bookstagram, like all these people who love books and talk about books and they share about books. And so there's this massive audience of people. And it's like, I found this one group of readers. They've got like a group of 200 people and they're like, hey, we'd love to read your book. Can you do a promo on your ebook and make it a dollar? And I said, well, ask my publisher. I don't know. And so my publisher did it for a week. And so 200 people were able to buy the ebook for just a dollar. Mm-hmm. And then now I've gotten like so far 40 reviews on Amazon from them because they liked it. And so, and I need those reviews for Amazon to like tell other people to read the book. And I would have never found them had I not been like engaged in that process, you know, or you guys for that matter either. Like I wouldn't be on the podcast had I not like made that, that intentional decision to like find the people I can share my message with.
Yeah, that's smart, man. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
I always just go search out books or hear of books and I go find them on Amazon and buy them. But, you know, is Bookstagram a part of like Instagram?
Yeah, it's just like what they call themselves or like that's what they're doing.
Is that a group handle?
No, it's just like their group, you know, like that's what they call themselves, I guess. Yeah. But it's just on the regular Instagram that everyone else is on.
Yeah.
But there is this huge audience of like people who are just, they've got like immaculate bookshelves and they're sharing all these books and best practices. And so it's like, I found so many amazing books I didn't even know existed before from them. And then it's exciting to see what they shared and then you share. And there's like, it's positive, which I think is great, you know?
Yeah.
So like when you read, are you the, you know, highlighter type or like sitting there highlighting and trying to extract information from the book that way? Or do you just read a book and go to the next one.
Kind of depends on the book. Like I just read Billion Dollar Liar, which is the story about the rise and fall of WeWork, the co-working space.
Yeah.
And that was like an enjoyable read. So that was like not a highlighter situation. That was just like an immersing myself in the story.
Yeah.
But if I'm reading a book that's got a lot of tangible like takeouts, like an Atomic Habits or something, where there's like all these little amazing nuggets, then I'll hit that with the highlighter. Cause I think it's cool for my kids to see that I have this thirst for knowledge. And like for me, when they get old enough to be able to be punished, like we're, instead of saying you're grounded, I'm going to say, okay, here, finish this book, give me a book report and then you're done.
Like I think Kel's done that before.
You decide how long you're in trouble for, you know? Yeah. And then you get this knowledge and whatever they got in trouble for, I'll try and pick a book that can give them some insight because knowing how I was as a kid, they'll probably take the same advice from the book better than they'll take it from me.
You pick the book for them?
Yeah, I'm going to pick the book for them based on what they did, make them read it. And I think it'll be cool for them to go back and see like, oh, dad highlighted this. Like I wonder what his takeaway was here, you know, or maybe it'll create conversation between them and me about like, oh, why did you highlight this section? You know? And so I think that's what's cool about books is they live on forever. Yeah, you know, I don't plan on dying anytime soon, but part of what I'm excited about with the book is like my
nobody
kids
ever does though.
Right. No, of course not. Yeah. But now my kids will always have my message.
Yeah.
You know, and like they'll always be able to reflect back on that. My grandkids and my great grandkids,
that
like
is cool.
They'll always know who and what I was and what I thought. I think there's something really cool about that.
Yeah. I think so too. Yeah. Do you ever go back and like study a book, like specific books that you really, really enjoyed? Or because there's two different types of readers, right?
Sure.
There's more of the reader that likes to read the same book 3 or 4 times and like almost study the information and like take it in. And then there's some people that can read like 40 books a year and they're just kind of zooming through books.
Yeah.
Like what's your
I think most of the time I don't ever reread a book unless it's really impactful. Like The Alchemist is a book that I've read more than once. How to Win Friends and Influence People is one I think you can read like every year.
Yeah.
You know, so there's or like Who Moved My Cheese. I've read that so many times because it's always a good message. You know, even like The 1 Minute Manager, like I'll read that with my team. And so I'm rereading it because I want them to read it. And so there are a few of the books that I'll reread, but for the most part I don't. And I've never really been because I didn't like school. And so when I feel like I'm taking a book and like studying it, it just brings back that trauma of like feeling lesser than in school.
Yeah.
And so I don't like it, you know?
I love reading the same shit over and over and you do. Over. Oh yeah. But maybe that's just because I don't retain well. Right. And I'm just like, dude, I know there was some good shit in there. I don't really fully remember it. So I better go back after it. Like
it's amazing
I
do have
a retaining problem, you know, but that's, you know, a personal issue.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely been times I've read a paragraph and then been like, man, what the hell did I just read?
I got to start
it. Like, I got to read it again because I let my mind daydream a little bit.
That's like mine with an entire book.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Even when you become a good reader, right? Because that was like a very common thing when you're like, you know, because we weren't really scholastic either, right? And so, you know, like, you know, when you don't read a book, you're pretty much your entire upbringing other than the one that your class made you read, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, you do. You get bored and you're not good at, like, really grasping, you know, the words coming out of that, out of those pages. But I've gotten better at that. Like, when I read things, I don't have to reread near as much. But I think, honestly, you can always get a lesson out of a book that you do reread, you know, because you really are only going to take in the things that are actually meaningful to you at that time. Like, I can sit there and read a book and understand it all, but when there's like that pond analogy I've talked a lot about, it's like, oh, that meant something to me. Or the elephant that, you know, is chained down. And then as they get trained to it, like, you know, they can really keep it chained down with just a rope and a stake, you know? And it's like, even though the elephant can totally break, like, all that stuff's like, oh, that's meaningful to me. Like, it just really resonate with it. So you take the lesson in, right? Yeah. So, you know, it's hard, man, when you're reading all those. I think it's a very common thing is all I'm saying. It's like, I think everybody, even when a great reader, still struggles with, like, retaining.
Well, there's just certain books. I think there's just certain books that I really, really want to know.
Sure.
Like the back of my hand, because I know how valuable it is, right? So I'll read a book and without a highlighter, and then I'll read that same book with a highlighter.
Yeah, like
and
that
then,
idea.
And then go through that again. But I've read like the book, The Brain, three different times. And like the third time I read it with the highlights in it, I'm like, why didn't I highlight that?
Yeah. It's so interesting.
You know,
like now,
you know, so it's like, you know, I'll go through and I'm like, man, that is, and maybe it's just the, in that moment I'm have a different perspective and I'm like, man, that really hits right now versus maybe when I read it previously or whatever. Right. So, you know, that's me. I don't know if I chalk it up to being an idiot or just very, very, you know, interested in the topic of the brain, because usually I don't do that with like other books, like How to Win Friends and Influence People. I've only read that one once.
Yeah.
Right. So some I'll only read once, but some, if I really, really want to get good at it. See, we talked about neural associations earlier, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of the book of the brain.
Absolutely.
So maybe I am retaining something.
Yeah, you are. Right? Yeah. And I think so often you do and you don't even realize it, right? Like you may not even realize you took it in, but then you'll be sharing a story and you'll pull back from like some wisdom or an antidote from a book and share that with someone without even realizing that you did like store it, but it's there.
Yeah, I agree. So dude, let me ask you this. You know, you've created all these, you know, routines for yourself and you've overcome a lot of things and you've got your business and all this stuff, but like, where are you going with all of it? Like, what does your future look like? Have you mapped that out? Like, what are some of the things that you're trying to move towards?
So I think when you think about like what you can do in a year, we always think we can do more in 1 year than we actually can. Right. Mm-hmm. So I like to think of it in 3 years, because we underestimate what we can do in 3 years. Right. We overestimate what we can do in a year. So when I think 3 years out, I mean, Vibrant's always going to be a huge part of my life. That's something that we've built from the ground up. And that's always going to be the main thing that I'm doing. And as I get older and further down that road, I really want to get in front of an audience. I want to help people, you know, like I want to be able to get out there and share my word. And like the book is a great platform to be able to do that. And it does, to your point, Trevor, give you that credibility where it's like, I can get a speaking arrangement now that I wouldn't have got without being a published author, which is just part of our society, right? It's all bullshit anyways, but it will work. And so now that I've got that credibility, I really want to get on stage and I want to help people. And I love it. Like when I get to go talk to SUU or get in front of an audience, like I really love to do that. Being on this podcast, sharing my message, I think that there's so much that people can take away from it. And even the students that came up to me yesterday at SUU, and like this one gal wanted to share with me like what she was going through with her parents and her family and kind of gave me her whole life story. And she'd only known me for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, and it was so interesting to see how much she was willing to share, because she could see it was coming from a place, like a real genuine place, you know? And if I can do that more often and more frequently, then that's what I want to do, especially with the younger generation, because I think they've got so many obstacles that we didn't have and so much more reason for self-doubt and so much more reason for comparison. Like, I really think they need to hear that message of like, you get to dictate your life. Like your life, good, bad, or indifferent, is a reflection of your actions and behaviors.
And your choices.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, anybody has the ability to create whatever it is that they want to create. Like, I can probably become a great pianist if I'm willing to give it 10 years.
100%. Totally agree.
Do I care enough to give it 10 years?
Yeah.
So the idea really is to find something that you care about enough to give it the time that it needs to unfold and give you the benefits of, you know, the work that you had to put in, right?
Right.
Like, that's just what it is. And I was reading something recently, or no, I was listening to a podcast, and it talked about the Greek definition of passion. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't.
It means to bear, suffer, or endure.
Wow.
Right? And so some people think, oh, I have to be passionate. And they think that that means that they have to be energetic and excited about this thing all the time.
Yeah.
Really, the definition, it means that you're willing to bear or suffer or endure for this thing that you say that you care about.
That makes a lot of sense.
That you have passion for, right? Because no matter what it is that you have passion for, that you want to accomplish, you will have to bear suffering and you
Absolutely.
Will have to endure,
Absolutely.
You know, obviously trials and tribulations and difficult days, because that's just part of the human experience, right? It just is what
yeah.
it is. And so, yeah, I thought that was really, really cool to get a new perspective, because I think that the young generation, everyone says you got to find something that you're passionate about. That just means you have to find something that you're willing to suffer for.
Yeah. That you're right. still going to do in the shitty days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which makes total sense, because yeah. that's where fulfillment lies.
Yeah.
You know, like fulfillment yeah. really comes when we achieve,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
By overcoming. And so it's like, what have you really achieved? If you say you're passionate about something, or I have to just have passion to feel fulfilled in what I'm doing every day, it's like, well, you don't really feel any passion for just, I guess if you're playing the guitar
yeah.
and you're playing an amazing song and you're like, you're just feeling all this passion. It's like, you don't really get the fulfillment from that. You get the fulfillment from mastering it,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, and learning those yeah. chords yeah, 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 and like yeah. beating your fingers up and getting them calloused and like all the things that it goes through
that it took, yeah.
to actually overcome that and be great at that. Right.
Yeah.
And then you feel passionate about it. So yeah. a lot of times when people are just wandering and they're just like trying to find their passion, it's like, man, you just need to pick something, overcome it. You know, achieve, and then the passion comes
from the
suffering, enduring.
Yes,
so it makes
yes,
total sense.
Yeah, no doubt.
And to your point, if everyone could pick up a guitar and rip an awesome chord, it would yeah. not be cool.
Yeah, exactly.
But because you can't, and you got to work hard at it. And to your point of the pianist thing, in Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Outliers, he really lays out that like it takes 10,000 hours to be an expert at something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you can put in that time, you can become an expert. And I think too often people think like, oh, I'm not built for that, or Trevor's different, Kale's different, I can't do that. It's like, well, of course you can.
Yeah.
If you put in the time that they yeah. put in and you work in the way that they work, then of course you can do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's an important message for people to know that. And it sounds so like, oh, rah, rah, when you say you can do anything, but you really can. If you put
yeah.
in the work and you're willing to stay consistent for a long period of time and you just stick to it, you really, truly can do anything.
Well, I think it's just important for people to understand, like you said, like a 3-year thing versus a
yeah.
1-year thing, right?
Yeah.
Because everybody's, you know, wanting what they want and they want it right now. And
right.
They hit a moment of frustration or $11.37 in a bank account
right.
and decide to kind of quit and give up because it's just not working.
Absolutely.
You know, and those are the test days, right? Those will determine how bad you really want it. And what makes somebody think that they're even deserving of having the thing if you can't get past those test days?
Absolutely.
Right? That's what makes it so rewarding, as Kel was just alluding to. And when I was listening to the podcast, it talked about, you know, passion and suffering. You know, I don't mean to go get, you know, too religious or anything, but then it talked about Christ.
Yep.
Said he loved everybody, right?
Yep.
And so he was willing to suffer for the people, right? Yep. And so it's just the same, like, if you want great finances, are you willing to suffer to
yeah.
have great finances?
Yeah.
Now, if you want a great body, are you willing to suffer? If you want to be a great hockey player, are you willing to suffer? Or a
yep.
pianist, are
yep.
you willing to suffer? Like, you have to find something that like that you look at that just inspires you just when you watch somebody else do it.
Yeah.
And ask yourself, are you willing to suffer to be that good at that thing? Because
yeah.
I think if it gives you an emotion or a feeling of inspiration to watch somebody else do it, that's kind of like a little signal to you, right? Like I don't get inspiration watching a ballerina or a hockey player. That's just not my thing,
sure.
right? Like I don't even know what move that they're doing, right? Like
yeah.
when I watch my daughter play soccer or whatever, I don't know. They say offsides. I'm like, I don't even know what that means, right? Because like, I don't really care
yeah.
enough,
yeah.
right? It doesn't like,
yeah.
I can watch a soccer play and somebody kick a goal and it's like, I don't jump up and get excited. It doesn't cause inspiration. Therefore, I'm probably not going to pursue trying to be good at soccer.
Right.
Right. Like find something like we scroll through, you know, Instagram or Facebook and you stop and you watch videos of certain people. What are they doing when you're watching these videos?
Yeah, inspiring
that's creating
you.
A feeling or an emotion. That's probably something that you would be willing to suffer for if it gives you the emotion just watching somebody else do it. imagine the emotion it would give you if you did it, right?
Well, and I told you before I came in, I heard you on that podcast about how you ran 38 miles for your 38th birthday.
Yeah.
And I went right home. I told my wife, I was like, hey, want to do something cool?
Yeah.
What if I did this? You know, like, what if I ran 36 miles?
How was her response to that?
She thought it was like, awesome. She was like, well, can I run with you? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to let people sign up instead of getting me a gift.
Yeah.
I'm going to let them sign up for a mile.
Yeah.
Like, which mile do you want to join me on? Yeah, you know?
That'd be cool.
And like, and then I get this whole year to build up to it.
Yeah.
But it was like, I was thinking like, man, before I talk about it out loud, let me really like play this through my head. Like,
yeah,
how much I'm going to have to run, how much I'm going to have to practice, how much I'm going to have to train. And it,
how much you'll have to suffer.
Right.
Yeah.
And but it made me excited. Like I heard you say that and I was like, wow, that sounds so cool. And yet you talked about your kids too and the impact it had on them. And I was like, what a great thing for my kids to see. And and as I'm getting older and I want to stay young, like what a great way to do that. And so I think you're totally right. Like you get things that inspire you and you think like, oh yeah, I wanna do that, you know?
Yeah, but then you question it. Just like you said, like, I better be careful before I speak this out loud.
Right.
I better be committed.
Yeah.
And I just think that not enough people get to the point where they actually speak it out loud.
Right.
Just like that gal when you went to speak in contend, you know, where she just didn't want to speak something big or crazy out loud. But how are you ever going to get the emotion or the feeling of accomplishment if you can't ever even surprise yourself and bite off something that's a little big, a little scary, and then do that thing? That's when you feel proud of yourself and you feel accomplished. You have to start doing things that you even think is a little bit crazy, that makes you kind of second guess yourself. But then when you commit and you actually do it, the level of self-worth or confidence that you can gain from it, because, you know, somebody else can come up and you say, oh man, that's really, really cool. But like, if you weren't surprising yourself when you did that thing, it's like, oh, hey, yeah, cool. But like, if you surprised yourself and then somebody's like, hey, like that was really cool, you're like, yeah, you know, you get to ride that dopamine hit for years.
Yeah.
Right. You're like, yeah, I did do that. And let me tell you about it. You know?
I think you bring up a good point for the people listening who have a business. I tell some of the students too, like, find a partner who has that thing you don't have. Like, I wouldn't naturally like dream really big because like just my analytical brain and like and my upbringing, it was like that was not my thing. But my business partner Breck is this visionary and he wants to do crazy shit, and he's like, we're gonna do this, and he'll have like 10 ideas that are just wild, and 9 of them actually are terrible, but that one is awesome. Right. And we would never do it if he wasn't that crazy person who's putting out these huge goals. And so I think it's important in your life, whether it's like your actual life partner or your business partner, who has those differences than you, so you can have that aspiration. And I realized it, I can't remember what book we were reading at Vibrant, but it was about that, like thinking bigger, dreaming bigger. And I realized like, shoot, man, I've always gotten everything I wanted in life, but I never really wanted a lot because I didn't have a lot. And so I was really looking for security. Yeah. It's like I bought a house and I can't remember what year it was, maybe like 2010 or 2011 here in St. George for $100,000. Like it was awesome. Yeah. So my mortgage was $600.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't have any debt. And so it's like, it was awesome, right? Because no matter what, I knew I was going to be able to take care of my family.
Yeah.
Like I could go sell t-shirts on the boulevard and pay for my mortgage, you know, like I was good. And then I read this book and I thought to myself, man, you know what? It's not that I don't have a lot. It's that I didn't ask for a lot. Like I just never was intentional with wanting more. And I said, I'm going to change that today. Like I'm going to start dreaming bigger because I know if I do that, I'll get it. Mm. And I was just too afraid to like want more. And so that was in 2020. So my behaviors were actually worse, but my results were better because I started dreaming bigger. Now I've got this beautiful dream home and a dream car and my business is doing amazing. And it all stemmed from my thoughts. Like it wasn't behavior driven. It really started in my mind. And now I'm getting those behaviors to align with my thoughts, but it started by just changing the way I was thinking about what I wanted in life.
Yeah. That's Kelbert, dude. Kelbert's he's a visionary. Right. Let's go big. Let's go big. Let's go big. Let's go big. Why not? Fuck it. Let's go big. You know, and I was like, oh, it makes me nervous sometimes.
Yeah.
That's scary. Know, it's scary for me too.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's not saying, not saying it's not, but
it's scarier for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little more conservative.
Yeah.
You know,
like, absolutely.
I'm like you, you know, I like having my shit paid off. I mean, like you said, you kind of got past that, but you know, I was willing to, I guess, suffer, you know, in a less than home, so to speak, because I bought mine in like 2010 as well.
Yeah.
And just hunkered down in that bitch for like 12 years and saved and saved and saved.
Yeah.
And then just paid cash for my next house.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, in the book, Outwitting the Devil, I know you've read that a couple times.
Yeah.
You know, he talks about that in there a little bit about how kind of when you bought that house for $100,000, like I can always...
Yeah.
Go back to this.
And no pressure to succeed.
You know, or the other stuff you talked about too, or I'll be happy when if I could just make $250,000, I'd be set. I don't need to make any more than that. It's like, really, that's like a way of like the devil creeping into your life. Like,
absolutely.
Because of that content, like even your friend talked about. Yeah. So I like to think of content or comfort because I used to chase that too. It used to motivate me. It was like, oh, when I get here, then, oh man, I could just relax. Right. And so I liked it. I reframed it in my mind where it's like, okay, comfort's not actually really a bad thing. It's just, you got to create comfort of just knowing, right. Knowing what you're capable of. And you get that to that point by getting, by achieving, by not getting comfortable, you create a comfort in knowing. You create a comfort in like knowing, dude, I could have everything taken away from me and I could still do it again.
Yeah.
You know, I have comfort in that. That's like knowing important. If everything was taken away, I could rebuild it.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's different frames of like comfort or content, but when it's the content or the comfort of like, dude, my house is paid off. I don't ever want to step out and risk again. I can just take care of my family right here. That's when like the devil creeps in, right? And he starts convincing you and controlling you that your worth is only that.
Yeah.
Creating a ceiling, really is what it is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Do you, you know, you talked about, you know, hey, this is what I want to do in the future. So do you have like income goals, or do you just say, hey, these are the actions that I'm going to take every day and I'm going to be consistent with it. And as long as I do these things on a consistent basis, I know everything else will work itself out.
Yeah. It's really more about the actions because like I've got a life that provides the life that I have. And I know if I do all these things, and that's, I was telling my wife, like, I know it's going to take a long time.
Yeah.
You know, like it, maybe my book will never be a bestseller, but if it does, it's going to take a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a long time before I get like the speaking engagements that I really want, but I'm willing to do the work every day because I know when I do, it's all going to pay off, you know? Yeah. And I'm also not in a huge rush because my kids are 6 and 9, like I said, and my ultimate goal would be by the time they graduate, then I'm really killing the speaking because I'm not missing time with them, you know? Then I can go travel and be a different place every week and be in different cities, but I don't necessarily want to do that right now when they're so young. I want to make sure I'm there and I can coach their basketball games and make it to the school events and all that stuff. But I don't have any financial targets tied to this whatsoever, really just opportunity and habit goals.
Do you want the bestseller on your book for like clout, or do you want it to
credibility?
Yeah,
right. That's really what it's about, because if you get to say you're a bestseller, then when you're speaking at an event, you're more sought after, and also you're probably worth more, even though it's all bullshit again.
Right.
Because my speech is the same either way.
Yeah.
Whether I sell 1,000 copies or 100 copies, I'm me no matter what.
Right.
Yeah. So you're getting me regardless.
Yeah.
But if I has that sticker on the book, then the me is just worth a little bit more.
Well, I got that sticker on my book. So
you have a book?
Yeah.
Oh, you do? I didn't know that. That's awesome. Yeah.
So, but there's a strategy behind it, right?
Yeah.
And for anybody who wants to write a book, if that's important to you, right? Yeah. That title, which it was for me at the time, there's actually a strategy behind it. And I actually hired this gal that set up the whole, you know, Amazon launch, right? And it's best number one bestseller on Amazon.
Right.
Right. But there's all these categories, right? And so like I hit number one in all the categories except for one, which Jim Quick was the number one, and I was number two for my book launch, right?
Yeah.
But you know, you build a lot of hype up for your launch, and then you have all these categories. But as long as you hit number one in any of those five categories, Amazon lets you put that stamp on your book, you know? And so there is a way. Like, so anyway, I hired this gal to help me get my strategy down. And you know, when I launched my book, I only sold a couple thousand copies out of the gate, but it got me number one bestseller in like all those categories, except for the one Jim Quick was the bestseller.
My publisher said, we had the call after the book came out. She said, all right, what do you want to do? And I told her, she's like, okay, well, do you want to be an Amazon bestseller? I was like, that'd be great. She's like, okay, well, here's how we do it. And I was like, what do you mean how you do it? She's like, well, it's just a strategy.
Yeah.
She's like, can we guarantee it? And I was like, so you just pay for it? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, I guess that's like everything else in life. And she's like, and you can be a New York Times bestseller if you want.
Yeah.
And then it's just, this.
Yeah.
And
it takes like, a lot more.
Yeah. And I was like, that's exactly right. Yeah. And so I was like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
That's how they're doing it.
Interesting. But really, it's no different than anything else. Like if you have a business and you pay more in advertising, you're going to get more in return, right?
Yeah.
That's really just that concept. But it is important because it will create more opportunity for me.
But the way you're doing it too, man, like getting the momentum and just keeping after your book and staying consistent, putting it out there, getting people to buy it. It's a cool way to earn it as well. I mean, Trev and I have talked about it, and I know we'll do it eventually, writing our own book together on The Real Business Owners, because he's writing his own book right now. I've written my own book. We'll write one together for The Real Business Owners brand. But it's like, dude, I'd like to do it at that bigger level of like New York Times bestseller.
Yeah, because you're just getting the opportunity and the platform to share it with people where they're going to hear it, right? You get to get on those podcasts. You get to get on USA Today. And it's not like it's a false success. It's real success. You're just getting that more opportunity to the platforms.
You're buying the marketing,
The opportunity.
Or attention.
Right. Yeah. And if the book sucks, they won't buy it. But if it's good and you get the platform, then you're going to succeed, right? Yeah. So I think your guys' book will be awesome because now you've got all these antidotes and almost 200 episodes of people sharing all their best practices. Like, that's the best way to gather information because it's not just what the two of you think. It's the collective of everyone who's been on the podcast. That'd be a great book.
So how did you write? Did you just write your book or did you do like the Rev thing, like where you recorded it and then transcribed it? Or
so I had a ghostwriter who worked with me. So we'd have a call every week. And then
it was pretty much like interview you.
Not really. It was almost like just talking to a buddy. So so we started out and it was like, okay, what's the premise of the book? What do we want to hit on? Let's build out the chapters. So we built the chapters out and then we'd have a call back. Chapter one, I know nothing. What do you want to talk about? And I was like, oh shit, I don't know. Like, so he's like, well, you know, and you just start having a conversation. And then I would like tell stories and then he would send me like, okay, here's chapter one. Here's, I need more about this. Mm. I need you to add this. So I would write some things too. But then I would read it and be like, oh shit, I told this story about my buddy Andrew. Like, I better make sure. Like, I was just telling it as like, here's a thing, but now it's in this book. So then I had to go at all the people and ask if they were okay with what was shown, but it was really interesting because I think my book reads like me because it is me just talking and he just put structure and format to it. Right. And so, that's I really enjoyed the pieces that I actually wrote as well. Like, that was really fun for me. And I think I would also like to do a podcast about winning the moment, interview people about their wins and losses in life. And I think my next one that I'd like to do is talk about like, this is the formula of the actual habits. Cause this one is not habit based because I wanted to start with people creating their own habits for themselves and defining their own success. But I think there will be the audience that's like, well, I want to know what you're doing. Yeah, well, I want to know what Trevor did. I want to know what Kale did. Right. Yeah. So then I'll give them that and say, if you want to have the success and they did, here's how they did it.
Absolutely.
You
know? Yeah. We need that guidance sometimes in order to get the confidence to start creating our own formula.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I know I did, you know?
Well, I mean, I think any formula to a certain extent is somewhat of a copied formula from somebody else. See somebody else doing something and that's how you create a spreadsheet. I know that healthy people do these things. And so I'm going to put a priority on doing these things because it's just, you know, somebody before us did all those things and proved that, you know, there were benefits to it.
Right. Well, and that's why the first chapter is I Know Nothing. Cause I had this like epiphany one day. Brecht walk in the office. And, you know what's interesting, dude? He's like, what? I was like, I don't know anything. I was like, the more I read, the more I realize I don't know because they all have their own opinion. So it's not like, it's not just so factual that like, this is the only way to do it because one person says it this way and another person says it that way. And neither one's right or wrong. They're both right. They just have different perspectives. And also in my book, I talk about like, I have nothing new to share. Yeah. I am just repurposing information. Like, this is just from books I've read and experiences I've had and stories that have been told. Like, everything we're saying has been said. And that turns out my whole like epiphany that I thought was so brilliant that I know nothing Socrates said like at the beginning of time. So it's like, even that one was already earmarked to somebody else, you know? But I think that's part of it is everything out there already exists and it's just finding what works for you.
Yeah. Well, and that's the cool thing about books is it's just a bunch of different people's perspectives.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
And then it allows you to look at certain things from different angles to hopefully find the thing that connects with you. Right.
Absolutely.
That's really what it comes down to.
So. Yeah. I used to win a lot of arguments with people because like, whether it's my mother, my wife, my ex-wife, my sister, you know, cause they would always be like, no, like this is the way you're supposed to do things.
Yeah.
Or I learned this and that's the way it's supposed to be done. Like, well, that's just somebody's theory.
Yeah.
Like, where did you learn that? Is that your theory or is that their theory?
Have you know, put it to the test?
They'd be like, well, I guess.
Quit making me question myself. Thanksgiving got interesting. So how do people find you, bro? How do people connect with you if they want to connect with you? You have your Instagram account, is that right?
Yeah.
What is that?
Just Cody_Aident. So if you like go to Google and just type in Cody Aident, CodyAident, pretty much any way that you can connect with me, will be there. Okay. And then of course the vibrantteam.com too. So if you're in hospitality or you need help with marketing or branding, then you can find us there as well.
Yeah. Tell them a little bit about that real quick. So individuals that maybe want to start their own, you know, lodge or, know, tell them a little bit about that real quick so that they understand kind of a little bit more in detail what you do there so that they can connect with you if they'd like.
So at Vibrant, we specialize in like boutique hospitality properties. Like if you want to build a Hampton Inn or like a Holiday Inn, that's not us. Like that, find someone else for that. But we like really unique experiences because I feel like that's what the audience is driven by. And so if you already have an existing property and you just need help maximizing your revenue or getting your marketing out there or finding a new consumer, we can do that. Or if you want to do a rebrand or if you don't yet have a brand and you've just got a concept, we can take you all the way from beginning to end where we'll build, we'll determine what your name needs to be. We'll build your brand. We'll build your website. We'll build your logos. We'll define your colors, your typography, and then we'll make that a reality. And then we've got this really cool thing that we've done really that was inspired in COVID called Virtual GM. And so we figured out how to run properties without staff. So like the dwellings, for example, in Leverkin is all ran virtually. The only staff are the housekeepers. Mm. And so our virtual GM, which they're pretty much all stay at home moms. So it's a great job for moms to have because they just need a phone. They can do it from anywhere. So you call to make a reservation at the dwellings. Megan or Becca will answer the phone. You don't even know that they're not like there at the property, right? Yeah. They're taking care of everything for you. We're using automation. So we use a system called Whistle. So when you arrive at the property, it'll text you and say, welcome to the property. Here's your lock code. It's all done with individual key codes that change for every guest. And then we're just using technology to allow that to run seamlessly. Mm. And so obviously your biggest expense as a property is usually your mortgage and your payroll. Yeah. And we found a way to handle one of those. So really anywhere in the boutique space, not even just in Utah, but anywhere, we've got properties from Florida up to Canada. We'd love to be able to help you out and see if we can make a difference. Well,
with your marketing, you also handle the mortgage to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Getting absolutely. Them booked
out. Yeah, that's exactly right. And we have clients that we do all their finances too. So if they don't even want to work at that, I built out this budget system where I can really forecast out for them, like really almost to a science of like what they can expect their expenses to be. They can always see their cash flow. Plus I'll do all their QuickBooks as well. And so if you want to just have this passive vehicle that creates income for you in the hospitality space, then we're a great option for
that. You're the guy.
Yeah.
Very cool. You're the guy. No, that is cool. Well, we appreciate you coming on, man. Yeah, sharing your wisdom, dude. Congrats on your book.
Thank you.
You know, you'll get that bestseller. You'll get those stages.
I'm going to,
you know, you'll continue to get business and continue to grow based upon obviously the way that you live your life, you know. So it was an honor to speak with you today, and we appreciate you coming out, man.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Yeah. You've created something really cool and special, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate you.
Guys, we appreciate you tuning in. Keep kicking ass. We'll see you next week.